Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host Jennifer Han, and as you may know, because I mention it in basically every episode of the podcast, I'm originally from Germany, but I went to university here in London. So to me and to many other EU students, UK higher education has always sort of felt like a really welcoming and multicultural place where people from different backgrounds can come together and learn from each other and build a real sense of community. Since Brexit, however, Canada has actually overtaken the UK as the most desirable destination for EU students, and the number of students applying for early deadline courses by UCAS from the EU has dropped by 9%, so early deadline courses meaning, you know, Oxbridge courses and medical courses. It doesn't look much different for the teaching staff either, as University College Union found that 76% of EU academics working in Britain are now more likely to consider leaving the country, and a third of them already know of fellow academics leaving. To get some insight into how universities, their students and staff are feeling about this, we brought on Sally Hunt, who's the General Secretary for the UCU. We discuss what a multicultural campus offers its students and what is needed, especially from Theresa May and our government, to sustain this in the future. As always, if you enjoy the show and you want to hear more Brexit news like this, you can subscribe to us wherever you're listening to this podcast, or find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Brexit Podcast. I'll start off with quite a general question. How much of the appeal of UK universities do you think is dependent on their diversity and multiculturalism?
I wouldn't put a figure on it, but it's very clear that the way that the UK university system is seen and presents itself is one that is global and by its very nature is international in its collaborations. And that means that its staff and its students reflect that. So to take away any element of that is going to impact on our global reputation. So it is very important.
Okay, and what exactly do diverse multicultural campuses offer their students that a more homogenous one wouldn't?
Well, you know, I'll do it two ways. I was at a meeting recently where I was talking to lecturers who were pointing out that their students tell them that if they have other students in the room and they're talking about subjects that are ones that are very familiar to someone who is born and brought up in this country, to have an outsider's perspective on that can make you look at something in a completely different way. And that's both in terms of analytical input into a particular issue or problem, but it's also cultural. And I think that to not have that kind of mixture of views and backgrounds is one that really detrimental. There are specific areas where you look at it and you think, well, it's obvious that what we need are the brightest and the best, and this is what every politician says. Brightest and the best when it comes to international collaboration and research in STEM subjects is an example of where our being in Europe has been of net benefit. It is where you can see that the UK has attracted by far the largest proportion of EU funding for research of any EU country. It is where, in Erasmus, you see that there is a very rich and diverse exchange of our students with others across the continent. And that is something that, both in terms of hard experience and input, is very helpful because it gives you much better language skills, it gives you much better understanding. But in terms of the soft skills that it brings both to the individual and to our economy in the future through contacts, through understanding, are not replaceable. And that's why it's so very important to both students and staff that you maintain those links.
So I know everything's very uncertain right now and it's hard to put certain numbers on anything, but could you give me an idea of how realistic you think it is that the amount of EU students coming to the UK to study will actually decrease as a result of Brexit?
I think I'd refer you to the evidence that Michael Arthur gave to the Select Committee, where he talked about reducing numbers of applicants to UCL for the first time.
Okay.
I think you would also see from the evidence that Dandridge gave, where she's saying that the sector is fragile, that there is clear concern from those whose responsibility it is to maintain both their own institutions, but be part of the wider UK, the wider UK senior teams, that there is concern about what is taking place. Now, anecdotally, I am getting a lot of people now, a lot of members telling me that they know of colleagues who are considering taking jobs elsewhere. We know that there are concerns about choices that international students are making as to whether this will be a place that they want to come and study. And I would stress, I don't think that that's just about European students and staff. I think that's about an international picture. We know, for example, that we've had severe reductions year on year of Indian students coming here. What you need to think about now, in terms of if you are an academic and you want to choose where you are going to bring your family or where you are going to fence that child in your family, does the UK present a welcoming picture to those from overseas? And I pose that question because one of the areas that we're getting increasing concern from our members is that sense of not being welcome. And that's very hard to miss, but it's also very hard to ignore. And I think that the more that you see a higher education policy, which I've said earlier this week and I'll say it again, seems to be run from the Home Office rather than BEIS or the Department of Education, the harder it is to believe that this isn't about immigration figures as opposed to higher education.
So have you heard any particular stories of, I know you talk mostly to academics, but have you heard anything about a climate of sort of worry already with EU students that are currently studying here?
Well, the point that I say on that is about them through our members, because it's their students who are talking to them, and we know that there is an increasing sense of unwelcome that is one that is coming on a more global level from government commentary as opposed to what's being said by universities. I think universities themselves are being very clear that they want to maintain both staff and students from overseas. They want to maintain the employment rights for the staff that are currently in the EU, and they want to maintain their ability to bring them in. We're all very clear that what we want to do is to make sure that students are taken out of immigration figures and are actually dealt with in a separate way. But we know that we're doing that, having to push at a door that at the moment isn't open. So when Theresa May made her speech where she said that higher education was part of the priority, that was very welcome. But what isn't welcome is the absolute lack of detail. So, you know, having the aspiration to reach agreements on security of both staff and students is great, but it's not a guarantee. And I think that's something that she has within her power to do, and she could do that. And at a stroke, that would make students and staff feel a lot more secure.
So what exactly, could you give me a little rundown of what exactly the factors are that would deter students?
The key one, as I say, is certainty about their visas, certainty about fees, certainty about freedom of movement in a more general way. And I say that particularly when you're looking at those who are coming through as postgrads, because you have to remember this isn't just about undergrads, it's postgrads who are coming through who are older, sometimes have families, sometimes are at the beginning of their academic career and then go on to stay in this country as part of the academic community. They will want to know whether that's something that they are going to be able to plan and do, because if they can't, they're going to look very carefully about whether they will choose here as opposed to Canada, Australia, America, India, or mainland Europe. So those are the key factors for us. Give them certainty, both in terms of their security of tenure, in terms of their ability to actually have a visa system that protects them and doesn't penalise them, and that's particularly with postgrads that I'm concerned about that, and to make sure that the actual overall figures for students are removed from immigration. But the umbrella point for that is that there is a tone coming from this government that is not about welcome. It is about limitations and it is about exclusion. And that, as a signal, is a very, very negative one.
So you think it's on the government to ensure that these diversity numbers stay up rather than on universities individually?
I think that universities can do do everything in their power to make it clear that they welcome both staff and students, but they sit within a legal framework, and that legal framework dictates what they can and can't do. So self-evidently, the government has got a clear responsibility within this. And I'd say that also being very mindful that there are differing pressures on the different nations. So, for example, in Scotland, they get a very high proportion compared to others of research. It's going to have a particularly negative impact on our Scottish universities if they are not able to maintain access to those research programmes. In Northern Ireland, we now have a real crisis in terms of political direction. They themselves need to know how they are going to actually plan their futures, particularly where education is fundamental to the sense of the economy, to the sense of community, to the sense of political coherence, and that is one that is cross-border there. And there are issues like that that I think really do need to have some sense of direction and some sense of certainty so planning can be done.
Mm. So are there reasons for EU students potentially not wanting to come to the UK anymore, the same as for EU academics in the UK wanting to leave?
Yeah, I think what people want to know is that they are going to have a good, positive personal experience, and what they're going to have is a good, positive academic experience. Now, both of those rely on knowing that what you are part of is an international, outwardly focused university system. That's what the university system is currently, and it's one that we should be very, very proud of, but it's one that is itself being subject to all sorts of pressures coming through. I mentioned before we started the interview the HE bill. That of itself is causing a lot of uncertainty in the sector. Put that alongside all the question marks about how research funding and teaching and student numbers are going to be impacted in the next 2 years through government policy. It's quite a difficult terrain. And students, because they are being asked to pay significant fees, if we come out of the EU, that is likely to be an international fee, are going to look very carefully indeed as to whether this is where they want to be.
There's been some assurances that Horizon 2020 funding will be matched, but I don't think, has there been anything said about the Erasmus scheme and whether that will be continued on?
We've got guarantees that all research applications prior to the Brexit vote will be matched and honoured. We've got guarantees on student funding, 16, 17, 17, 18. We haven't got anything beyond that. We know the ministers and officials within BEIS are working very hard to get clarity, but we, like everyone else, are awaiting more detail from the government, and until we get that, it's very hard for us to know what is going to take place. And at the moment, we have access to the Erasmus programme, which is for European students to spend a year free within another country within Europe. And we have a lot of UK students who spend a year as part of their degree going to Ireland, France, Germany, Spain. Do you see what I mean? It's an integral part of a modern languages degree. There is a big question mark as to whether that will continue, because Erasmus is part of the EU funding. What we need to know is that there is going to be a comparable funding put in place to protect that part of our language undergraduate offer, because if there isn't, that's going to make it more difficult for those from less well-off backgrounds to choose languages as a subject, and it's going to diminish what a languages degree is, because without having the access to that year, it becomes much more a case of learning at a distance as opposed to actually experiencing language in a way that makes you competent to understand both the country and the language itself. And that's something that we've got to be really, really, I think, on the ball about, because since 1987, we've had over 200,000 UK students go through that programme. It's essential, and it's something that I don't want to get lost in science and technology. The Erasmus programme is one that's really important, that we have the equivalent of, or we maintain access to.
Mm. So is that Erasmus exchange, is it just important for language students, do you think, or does it also have value for other students?
But well, if it brings other students from the EU into our university system, we all benefit. One of the, I heard a story recently where someone was talking about doing a discussion around Northern Ireland and hearing questions from someone outside of the UK about that made, this tutor said, the debate one that was much more challenging for the students from the UK, because we don't realise that we all have very set views on things that are close to us, and hearing that perspective from the outside was very, very good. And I think you would find that replicated over and over and over. What I have from the students that we talk, that they talk about that year abroad as the defining feature, both of their degree, but also one of the most important features of their life. And they know that it makes a massive difference to them in terms of confidence, in terms of self-awareness, in terms of the subtleties of another country. Now, think about that in terms of what this government is saying. They're saying we are an outward-focused country. We are going to need linguists. And at the moment, we are putting a lot of uncertainty into that particular programme. I go back to what we found in our survey. We know that an awful lot of our members are telling us that the links with EU research collaboration and staff work between universities in this country and elsewhere are being damaged. We know that.
Mm.
When you're being told that you've got nigh on 30% of academics thinking of leaving this country, when you know that they are saying that this is an overwhelmingly negative impact in terms of how the sector is going to be able to work, it's not something that takes an awful lot of time to understand as being a negative rather than a positive within the sector. What I would say to you, so that, because I mean, unrelentingly negative there, and I don't mean to, what I think we have to appreciate is that we have a really marvellous, really marvellous higher education system in this country, and it's one that globally has got a top-notch reputation. I've got absolutely no doubt that the staff that I represent and universities in general will work very hard to protect their reputation and the quality of work that we deliver. But what we need is a government that's going to support us, not make that more difficult. And at the moment, the uncertainty, both for students and staff, is making that challenging, and that's a polite way of putting it.
As always, thanks for listening, and if you enjoy the show, please subscribe to us on your podcast platform of choice so you'll be notified whenever we upload a new episode, and you'll be able to tune in. In the meantime, you can find us at brexitpodcast.com and on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at brexitpodcast. The show is produced by Jennifer Han, Tim Hemming, and Warren Paul, and our theme song is Cool Vibes by Kevin MacLeod.